when we talk about the heart, we have to talk about heart disease prevention. Because when we look at the fact that over 40% of the American population dies of some variety of heart disease, then it has to be highest on our list in terms of looking at prevention. And so I bring to you internist and geriatrician Dr. Fred Harvey to help me talk about the heart. How's your heart this morning, Dr. Harvey? Okay, let's give you a live microphone, and then maybe your heart will be even happier.
That would be helpful.
Oh, there we go.
So, yes, February is Heart Month, and it's a joyous month should you choose to open your heart to it. Look at the weather outside today.
Oh, boy.
So many of us think about the heart in medicine. It's and rightfully so. It's the principal cause of death for both men and women in America. 2 out of 5 people die of arteriosclerotic heart disease, and this is one of the highest, almost the highest rate in all of Western cultures. Japan were twice that of Japanese incidence of heart disease, and it's estimated we spend about $300 billion in health care for this, or I should say illness care, for following up on the damage that this illness has caused.
Yeah, we want to continue to remind the listeners we don't have a health care system in America. We have a disease care system in America.
Exactly. It would be nice if we had a health care system, and that's what we're working on. So to frame what this actually is, for people to understand what heart disease is, I wanted to talk a little bit about maybe take us back to medical school in a way. Go and learn some Latin. Atherosclerosis is the name of what occurs in the arteries that we call heart disease, what causes heart attacks and strokes.
Yeah, we call it hardening of the arteries.
Exactly. And it all starts with something called atherogenesis. Athero meaning plaque and genesis meaning birth of. So we have atherogenesis, or the birth of this illness that we've been chasing for years. And the way it starts is with something called an atheroma. It's like a little tumor of fat, like any kind of tumor. It ends in oma, like carcinoma is a cancer. So an atheroma is like a tumor lining your artery. But this is really small. The original atheroma is called a fatty streak, because when you look at the artery, when it's opened up in autopsy and you look at the inside of it, underneath the single cell layer, this fabulous organ that even I have talked about, the endothelium that lines every blood vessel, it's only one cell thick. Underneath that cell, the body stores some excess fats that it doesn't need. And that's where this atheroma starts. And in that little fatty streak, we have the fats. LDL cholesterol is one of the principal fats there. And mixed with that is some fibrous material. It comes from something in the blood that causes clots. It's called fibrin. And then there's some immune chemicals. One of them is called interleukin. And this mix of fats, chemicals, is not something the body wants there. It's not designed to be there, but it's a place where it gets stored because we have nothing else to do with it at that time. The problem is, though, that this stuff can deteriorate, and it goes rancid. Rancid fats are like soap, and so you start to get this LDL cholesterol to oxidize. Oxidation causes the rancid fats, and
you know, I always talk to the listeners about what it's like when you take a nut and you put a walnut or a pecan or something in your mouth and it's gone off and you can't spit it out fast enough because
yes,
it's so nasty. I use that as the example for people to understand what rancid fats mean.
Exactly. So that kind of nasty bitterness is sitting underneath your artery lining, underneath that endothelium, irritating it more. So what happens is that irritating bitterness attracts more white blood cells. Your immune system responds. The white blood cells put out more of these immune chemicals. The immune chemicals trigger more inflammation. The inflammation causes more oxidation. And so we end up with...
So it's a nasty cycle where inflammation begets more inflammation.
Exactly. And
hence the name Inflammation Nation.
Exactly.
You know, I love that book, Inflammation Nation.
And so as this develops, you get a thickening of that fatty streak, and then the endothelium begins to react. The endothelium starts to get thicker, more fibrin gets deposited, and eventually you end up with atherosclerosis, or hardening of the arteries. But it's not really that hard. It seems to be, because it's not the usual pliable artery, but what it really is this collection of white blood cells that are actively trying to eat up all the cholesterol, and as they do, they turn into these big things called foam cells, and the foam cells are just full of rancid fat, and then you have these cells that die, and all that debris is left in there, and free radicals are generating from all this inflammation and causing more inflammation, and you have all these inflammatory chemicals, so it's just nasty mess of pus, essentially. It's just like you have an infection underneath the lining of your blood vessel, and it's covered with a scab of fibrin. Fibrin is the chemical that oozes out in the yellow fluid whenever you get a cut, and it makes that hard scab on the outside of your skin. It does the same thing on the inside, but it's in a wet environment. So you have this wet, nasty scab sitting over a collection of pus on the inside of your artery.
Oh, that's about as disgusting as you can possibly think of, but you said the magic word here. You said the magic word that it's made out of cholesterol. Well, you know, I've talked so much here on No Nonsense Nutrition about the fact that the cholesterol story is a scam in terms of the way that it's been presented to the American public.
Without a doubt.
The American public believes that cholesterol is the enemy and that cholesterol is bad as a compound in the body, and that anytime you eat any food, because any animal, it doesn't matter if it walks or crawls or swims or flies, any animal contains cholesterol. So the cholesterol doesn't occur in the plant kingdom, but it certainly occurs in the animal kingdom. So a lot of people think that, you know, in order for them, they have to avoid cholesterol to keep their cholesterol from going up, and they have to take a statin drug in order to get their cholesterol down. And now you're telling me it's cholesterol that's setting up this fatty streak. So where do we hook these two things together about the bad story about cholesterol and the good story about cholesterol?
Yeah, that's the interesting thing. Cholesterol, the good story of cholesterol is that it is the basis for all of our steroid hormones and our sex hormones. So we get really valuable, important chemicals out of cholesterol metabolism, pregnenolone and DHEA, testosterone, estrogen.
Cortisol.
All these things come from cholesterol. So it's really a positive molecule. We need it to, and it's also a membrane stabilizer. It helps all of our cell membranes remain in a more balanced state so that they actually respond better to signaling, which is through which the membranes is through which all the signaling in the body occurs. So it's
and
really
we have
valuable.
To remember that the brain is made, a lot of the brain is made of cholesterol.
Yes.
And so if we actually zeroed out the cholesterol, we would be, well, an elected political official.
Are they all on statin?
Because we would have sucked out part of the brain.
Yes. So what's really interesting is in that atherosclerosis problem, cholesterol is involved in there, but as you heard me describe, there's so many other things that are in that mix. And it's really not a problem when you have that fatty streak if the LDL cholesterol has not yet oxidized. And this is the issue. When the plaque begins to oxidize and you get rancid fats, then it starts to develop into a problem.
But you see, when I get my blood work done, and my blood work lists cholesterol, HDL, the happy stuff, LDL, the lousy stuff, VLDL, the very lousy stuff, and triglycerides. I don't see anything on that list about oxidized LDL.
That's true. And unfortunately, most medical analysis doesn't really look at the oxidized LDL, but one of our colleagues has a test called oxidized LDL, and it actually looks at that. And it's very helpful for determining whether this cholesterol is a risky business at this point.
So for an extra $75, we can get oxidized LDL tested and find out whether our LDL is really as bad could be.
Exactly. And so it's this difference between the types of cholesterol and whether it's gone rancid that really changes the perspective here, because most heart attacks occur in arteries that have less than 50% occlusion. In other words, the atherosclerotic plaque has not even filled 50% of the lumen of the blood vessel. And even 25% of sudden deaths due to coronary syndrome are due to events that occur in people who have never had any symptoms before. So there's
right, their first symptom of heart disease is death.
Yeah, they're dead. And so why is this happening? And I believe it's because we have this wet, gooey plaque that becomes rancid. And we have now some tools to assess whether the rancid plaque is really active. That oxidized LDL gives us a very good signal.
So that brings me to my very first endorsement of a supplement. You know, as far as I'm concerned, the vitamin that you must take in order to delay aging is vitamin E. I can tip my diet to get more vitamin C. I had strawberries and pineapple and papaya this morning, so I can get more vitamin C.
Yes.
I can tip my diet to get more magnesium or more B12, but it's very hard for me to tip my diet to get more vitamin E because I don't eat a lot of wild seeds. So if you don't take any other vitamin, nothing else, I'm going to endorse that you take vitamin E, because vitamin E fights this greatest fear of aging, this atherosclerosis, this gradual clogging and hardening of the arteries that actually begins in our youth. It's really astounding that back in the Korean War, they began to do autopsies on the, you know, tragic deaths of these young soldiers that were coming back from Korea, 19 and 21 years old, and they already found out that they had these fatty streaks and these atherosclerotic developments happening even at that young age. So, you know, when we're talking about killing 500,000 Americans every year, I think that our federal government would do well to ship everybody a bottle of 400 IU vitamin E every month. We'd actually save billions in health care costs, because that bad type of LDL blood cholesterol, the one that's chemically altered, the oxidized, rancid, or toxic LDL, is the one that is affected by vitamin E. It is better than any other antioxidant vitamin in terms of entering the LDL cholesterol molecule and inhibiting this hazardous oxidation. So it actually switches off the genesis of coronary heart disease. When we look at the studies that have been done, University of Texas in Dallas really did a very profound study on 800 IUs of vitamin D and how it slashed the oxidative rate of LDL. And to me, that was the milestone study that demonstrated that you could work right at that beginning, at that atheroma, at that atherogenesis, to help to stop the development of heart disease.
And a follow-up supplement to that is alpha-lipoic acid, because alpha-lipoic acid helps to regenerate the effect of vitamin E in the body. So if the vitamin E has actually nullified some of that oxidation inside the LDL, it can be regenerated and do it again if we have some alpha-lipoic acid on board.
And so when we look at the large-scale studies that Harvard did, the 87,000 nurses studies, it turned out that women who took even 100 to 250 IUs of vitamin E for at least 2 years dropped their incidence of major heart disease by 41%. So it doesn't just work when you start when you're young. It actually helps to rejuvenate old arteries. A monkey study was done at University of Mississippi where these animals were fed this really high-fat diet, and one group got vitamin E and the other group didn't. And the group that got vitamin E had one-fifth the amount of artery blockage as the monkeys that were denied vitamin E. So the benefits of taking vitamin E far exceed the benefits seen from reducing blood pressure or reducing high cholesterol.
Without a doubt, because reducing the high cholesterol doesn't necessarily address the oxidized cholesterol issue. And as Eve mentioned earlier, to work on that oxidized cholesterol, the wild seeds are really very good. Whole grain, nuts, seeds all contain some amounts of vitamin E, but those seeds are very much more potent. And then further on, more supplements to support that oxidative stress issue. Coenzyme Q10 is also a fat-soluble vitamin. It gets in and helps to prevent lipid oxidation, and beta-carotene, especially in the carotenoid family, astaxanthin, really helps to stabilize cell membranes, and that's where much of the rancid fat problem occurs in those cell membranes. That's where you trigger a lot of the immune problem. When the cell membrane becomes rancid, it presents itself to white blood cells to kind of piss them off. And so if you have...
That's a technical medical term.
Exactly.
Doctor.
And once the white blood cells are really aggressive, then they start putting out more chemicals. So if you have a stabilized membrane with CoQ10 and vitamin E and the carotenoids, you have a much happier cell system.
And let's remember that beta carotene is going to show up on all the orange and gold vegetables. So the papaya I had this morning, the carrots that were in my stew last night, we're going to see the sweet potato, the butternut squash, the acorn squash, the cantaloupe, apricots, all of those things being high in beta carotene. But surprisingly enough, things that are bright green like
spinach,
broccoli, are high in beta carotene. It's hidden underneath the chlorophyll. And astaxanthin, this is a unique property that shows up as the pink color in the shrimp and the lobster and the salmon. So when you're eating these healthy seafoods that have that pinkish color, you're getting that astaxanthin action at the same time.
So, but if we back up a little bit before we get to the oxidized LDL situation, we just think about LDL. We've talked about this numerous times. The cholesterol myth that has been driving dietary choices and mass food marketing for two decades has caused the diabesity epidemic. Avoiding fat and eating more carbohydrates has been really detrimental to the entire picture here. The nutritional changes that we need to make to address the LDL cholesterol are to actually increase fats to some extent, not necessarily a lot of fat, and definitely not trans fat and animal saturated fat, but to get fats from seeds and nuts, coconut oil, and eggs even. Your intake of cholesterol is not what drives your cholesterol level. It's more of your intake of carbohydrates, because once you ingest a lot of carbohydrates, your liver has to package them up into triglycerides and send them out in LDL cholesterol packets. So the more sugar you eat, the more high fructose corn syrup, the more you're going to drive a system that increases those problems. In fact, there was a study that was done that showed that a group of men who were put on a high carbohydrate diet, it was whole grains, but it was greater than 60% carbohydrates, had a wrong effect. Even though they thought they were getting good fiber, etc., they were having increased triglycerides and decreased HDL cholesterol. But a less than 60% carbohydrate diet in this the control group actually showed that they had lowered LDL cholesterol and elevated HDL and lowered triglycerides. So a diet that's in the Mediterranean style, where you have a foundation of vegetables and fruits added to it with some grains and some meats and nuts and seeds and sugar at the very end, and high density fats, that is really an ideal diet to turn this picture around.
Well, gee, you know, for the last 30 years, I've been saying eat what occurs in nature. Chickens occur in nature. Chicken nuggets don't. Potatoes occur in nature. Pringles don't. So, you know, what we're listing as the Mediterranean diet is simply eating what occurs in nature.
Eat close to the
but,
ground.
You know, we can't emphasize enough, Dr. Harvey, the dangers of statin drugs. With one out of four Americans over the age of 45 taking a statin drug to reduce their cholesterol, what they don't hear is that there was a 52% increase in the prevalence and the extent of calcified coronary plaque compared to non-users. We've also learned that statin drugs increase the risk of diabetes in women. Statins have shown specifically to increase your risk of developing type 2 diabetes in postmenopausal women by almost 50%. And of course, diabetes speeds the development of heart disease by 400%. So here's our catch 22. Statin drugs lower cholesterol so that you can die of another form of heart disease.
Isn't it amazing?
I mean, we have been so brainwashed by Big Pharma when it comes to these statin drugs.
I don't want to blame Big Pharma. It's really the medical model, and pharma plays into it. But this is the problem with our entire illness care system. Allopathic medicine is based on looking at an illness and then defining that illness, naming that illness, blaming that illness, and taming that illness, and staying so linear in that thought that wellness is nowhere in the equation. Optimal functioning has nothing to do with what Western medicine addresses. They find a problem and they try to squelch it, quench it, kill it, put it down with some kind of method that's aggressive, noxious, and harmful to the body because they're fighting constantly. It's like,
well, that's the reason that all of the drugs have the word anti. They're anti-hypertensives. They're anti- cholesterol, they're anti something.
Anti human life.
Yeah, really. Antihistamine.
So, yeah, we need to really reframe that and look at the bigger picture rather than trying to find an answer to every problem through a pharmaceutical or other interventional solution. Back up and change the behavior that is getting us there. So we have to look at the nutrition. We can't just continue. I mean, we could find a way for the government to pay for that vitamin E that you suggested give to every human being in America today by simply taking the $30 billion that it supports high fructose corn syrup prices with so that we can buy the stuff cheaply enough to kill the population. It's that simple. Shift the monies to another place.
So for all of those people that are out there that are taking statin drugs, what we want to remind them is that I know you see it in your practice because I sure see it in my practice, the number of problems that happen with muscles, with nerve damage in the hands and feet, with depression of the immune system, with pancreas and liver dysfunction, sexual dysfunction, cataracts, memory loss, increased risks of cancer. All of those things have been tied to statin drugs.
Every one of them, yes. It causes major dysfunction in a major metabolic system that interferes with cellular energy. I mean, it interferes with the production of coenzyme Q10 in the cell. Coenzyme Q10 is what facilitates the energy movement through the mitochondria, which metabolizes everything. We're stuck with this medicine in there junking up the system. I mean, who wants to take a 3-hydroxy, 3-methylglutaryl coenzyme A reductase inhibitor to make their cholesterol work better? I'd rather run and eat a better diet.
Well, the circumstances are that, you know, my 83-year-old client may not be able to run.
Yes, that's true.
And because she's got bad knees, she may not be able to stand in the kitchen and, you know, slice a whole bunch of vegetables. So, you know, there are compromises here.
Absolutely.
Are there any places that statin drugs actually offer a benefit?
Immediately after a heart attack, there is definitive evidence that it will help you prevent a recurrence in the near future. And if you have an intervention like a stent, it's critical to be on one of those because the stent sets you up. Think about the stent just for a second. We have a scab-topped pus cavity inside your artery. They put a wire mesh on it and squish it as hard as they possibly can further into the wall of the artery, causing that gunk to ooze out around the edges of the stent. You think you have a nightmare waiting to happen before you put the stent in. Afterwards, the increased incidence of heart attack within the next 3 months is so high that you must take a statin and an antiplatelet agent to prevent the next heart attack.
Well, and we want to let the listeners know, if you're taking a statin drug right now and you're not convinced by the information that we're giving you today, we will fall on our knees and beg you to please, if nothing else, take coenzyme Q10 in a gel form. Never take CoQ10 as a powder.
Right.
Take CoQ10 as a gel form, at least 100 to 200 milligrams of it every single solitary day to at least in part offset some of the bad news of the statin drug. But other than those things, if there's somebody out there and they want to eliminate statin drugs, you know, I get clients that come into my office and they say, oh, well, I want niacin, or I want red yeast rice, or I want something natural to reduce cholesterol. I said, yeah, but you're still buying into the cholesterol story. Even if you just trade a drug for a natural remedy,
yes,
you're still buying into the idea that cholesterol is bad news.
And red yeast rice still is a statin.
Red yeast rice is still a statin, a very low-dose statin,
right,
but a statin nonetheless. And so we want to understand that things like fish oil are one of the first places that we can make a difference in inflammation throughout the body. And whether that inflammation is in the artery, in the lung is asthma, in the joint is arthritis, and the skin is eczema, and the brain is Parkinson's. It doesn't make any difference where the inflammation is. The use of good marine lipids, fish oils, are just proven beyond a shadow of a doubt to reduce inflammation across the board in the body.
Yes, and there are two types of fish oils, phospholipids and free fatty acids. Most of what we've been dealing with for the last since I've been in practice is the free fatty acids. General fish oil, you get it in a bottle. Cod liver oil is a free fatty acid. If you get the concentrated fish oils, it usually is, even in capsules, it's still free fatty acids. What they are is just fats in solution. The phospholipids, though, are bound up. They are like our body actually uses the lipids. It's all of our cell membranes are phospholipids. And so recently there's been availability of phospholipid supplementation. You can get phosphatidylcholine and serine. But now we have actually phospholipids from krill that seem to be highly effective. They don't need any kind of transport mechanism to get into the body, so they're really available, and they are really doing some great things with triglycerides, cholesterol, HDL, maybe even a little bit more effective than plain fish oil. They cost a bit more, but the thing is, what we know already from fish oil is that it's highly potent, and just taking the fish oil provides so much benefit. In fact, the GISSI study, G-I-S-S-I, in the 90s, I believe, showed a 45% reduction in overall mortality. That's almost half fewer deaths on only 850 milligrams per day of omega-3 fats. And that's people that were already taking a Mediterranean diet and on an aspirin tablet a day. They had 45% reduction in overall mortality.
Astounding. If we had a drug that had a 45% reduction in overall mortality, it would be on the front page of the New York Times every single solitary day.
That's because some corporation could be then patenting it, marketing it, and making lots of money on it. But this is fish oil, and it can't be patented, so we don't hear this kind of information readily. But it's out there. This is in the American Journal of Cardiology that the fish oil is that effective.
Well, if we want to stop that fatty streak from showing up in the first place, the dietary changes that we need to make include reducing the amount of non-natural fats that you get in the diet. And when
Very
I say
true.
Non-natural fats, things that don't occur in nature, you know, when you take a seed, any seed, sunflower seeds, sesame seeds, and you take that particular food and you put it under high temperature, high pressure, and pour a solvent over it to get the oil out, it's no longer a natural food. You've altered that food. When you take a whole big vat of soy oil that came from genetically engineered soy, and you run high pressure hydrogen through that and you hydrogenate that oil, or you make that oil act more like a saturated fat. Those fats are twisted. They're the thalidomide version of what a natural fat should be. They're a weirdo. And so they bind to your cells in such a way as to create damage. I think canola oil is dangerous. I think hydrogenated and partially hydrogenated oils are dangerous. I think solvent extracted oils are dangerous. And so when we put those things in the body, we can contribute to the manufacturing of this initial atheroma, this initial streak of fat that appears in the body. And that can also happen even when people are eating natural fats, when they eat too much of them in a single serving. I told the story on WMNF a couple of weeks ago about one time when I went to Burns Steakhouse in Tampa, and there was a guy at the next table, and he ordered the largest steak that you could order there, which was 26 ounces. And I said, it looked like a child laying on the plate. I mean, it was just this unbelievable size piece of meat. And he had a baked potato with sour cream and bacon bits. And he had asparagus with hollandaise sauce. And you're going to love this one, doctor. He finished the meal with a piece of cheesecake.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he was a great big mountain of a man. It wasn't just that he was overweight. You know, he was like 6'5" and 260 pounds.
Yes.
You know, he's just a giant guy. And he ate every bit of this food. And I'm sitting there doing the calculations in my head, and I realized that he ate about 200 plus grams of saturated fat in a single meal.
That's amazing.
In a single meal. I mean, that would be like sitting down and eating a stick of butter and then having it with another stick of butter and then having a stick of butter as your salad and then having another stick of butter as your dessert.
I don't think any of the commercial Burger Doodles joints even has a meal that comes close to that.
No, 90 grams is the highest I can find at the burger joints. But the irony was, when we went out to the parking lot, the guy was out there talking to his other dining guests, and he reached into his pocket and got out a Rolaids or a Tums or something. He was unwrapping the thing and putting it in his
already.
Mouth. Already. But the thing that he didn't realize is that's a heart attack on a plate. He could have so many fats saturate his bloodstream after a meal like that that, you know, I get reports back in my clinic, and it will say on the blood report, unable to be read, blood too lipemic.
Yes.
Meaning there's just so many fats floating around in the bloodstream that you can't get an accurate evaluation of that particular specimen. And what I want people to understand is they can do it with a single meal.
That's true. I had a patient that, he had some liver dysfunction from some excess alcohol intake, but he had milk blood with a triglyceride of 10,000.
Whoa.
The normal is, actually, the top normal is 150.
Milk blood is something I've only read about in the books.
It was incredible. This you can do that. His was long term, but one of those burger doodle meals can do it. And the worst part is if they still use the partially hydrogenated oils in the fryer, there was a study done that showed that the oil in trans fats is so toxic to arteries that they will go into spasm as soon as the fat touches the endothelium. And they'll
Yikes.
Stay in spasm for 2 days. Even
so,
after
go to the
away.
State fair and have
funnel cakes.
Fried funnel cake followed by a fried french fry, followed by a fried corn dog,
and
followed by
a fried Twinkie.
A fried Twinkie, right? A fried Snickers bar, a fried ice cream. Yeah, you're really winning here. Well, you know, I have to endorse one other food here. When I think about the health of the heart, I still have to say that I think that we need to change that axiom from an apple a day keeps the doctor away to an onion a day keeps the doctor away. And the reason that I say that is because onions and garlics and leeks and shallots and green onions, all of those members of the lily family, the allium family, are magical foods when it comes to coronary protection. And one of the ways that they help to create the benefit to the heart is by working on that molecule that you spoke about earlier, fibrin.
Yes.
And I tell clients, if you think of fibrin and think of the word fibers, mm-hmm. like when you have a little piece of lint that comes off your sweater, and that little piece of lint, microscopic lint, is floating through your bloodstream, and it allows these blood platelets to agglutinate together, to stick together, and to make a clot. And so anything that you can do to take a pair of scissors and cut those little bits of fibers, those little bits of fibrin in half, in pieces, can reduce your ability to make a clot. And so we can do that with things like onions, and we can also do that with certain nutrients.
Yes. A visual illustration for you about the fibrin. I think if you're eating a healthy diet and exercising, doing what you can to reduce oxidation, if you think about this comparison, when you throw white cotton sheets into a dryer and then you clean out the lint bin, it's got a little bit of smattering of lint in there, the little tiny fibers. But when you throw a load of terry cloth towels in and you try to clean out the lint bin, then it's this thick mat of individual fibers. It's not just one thing. So this is what fibrin clot is like. The more fibrin you build up, the more you get lint in your system, and you can get this big matted clot eventually if you have enough inflammation. And so what you want to do is keep it clean as possible. Keep the least amount of those things flowing around. And so garlic and onions actually help to chew up the tiny little pieces of fibrin that end up coming together into form those mats.
And so does the supplement nattokinase. Remember, if it ends in an ASE, it's an enzyme.
Yes.
And natto is probably singly the most nasty, disgusting thing that I have ever put in my mouth.
Ew.
It is a condiment that is commonly used in Asia that is fermented from soybeans. And so just like Worcestershire sauce or soy sauce or some of the other condiments that we use are fermented condiments, so is nattokinase. So I'm happy I don't live in a culture where natto is a part of the diet, because I have to tell you, this is something I don't think I could ever acquire a taste for.
It's kind of like thick athletic shoe juice.
I think of it as a cross between asphalt and a dead fish.
Kind of like that too. Very good.
But the thing is, natto kinase in a supplement is a real good idea, especially for somebody who's had a heart attack or who's ever had a blood clot anywhere. You know, I have a friend who had a blood clot after knee surgery, and the circumstances are she had to be put on blood thinners. So she's somebody that when she goes in to have another procedure, I want her on natto kinase for at least a month before she goes in for her procedure to reduce her risk of a future clot.
Yeah, because natto kinase actually helps stabilize the fibrinogen system. It's a very complex system that has both promoting and inhibiting arms of it. And the natto kinase actually slows down promotion of making the clot, and it also speeds up dissolution of the clot. It triggers mechanisms in the body that chew up the clot itself. So it really, over time, does a great job to help stabilize that thick blood issue that promotes the cardiac event.
Well, and I have to talk about one of my other great buddies in nutrition, and that's magnesium.
Absolutely.
You know, and a lot of people don't understand that magnesium, when it's taken in the oxide form or the citrate form, acts as a laxative. But there are other forms of magnesium that we can take that don't have a laxative action. So if somebody actually needs to clean out the pipes, using mag oxide or mag citrate is a good thing. But if we really want to get the big benefits, the anti-aging promise that magnesium offers, look at the list. It reduces vascular spasms. It reduces angina, chest pain. It increases clot-busting activity. It inhibits blood platelet stickiness that leads to clots. It helps to keep heartbeats normal. It boosts HDL and ApoA1, good types of cholesterol. It suppresses triglycerides. It helps to maintain normal bones, and it keeps free radicals down. That's a pretty powerful list for a really inexpensive supplement like magnesium.
Seriously.
So, doctor, what do you have to say about magnesium and its relationship to the development of heart disease?
Well, one of the studies revealed that, as opposed to development, the event that comes after, it actually had a 35% reduction in platelet-induced thrombotic events. And that's what many of these...
Okay, now tell everybody what a platelet-induced thrombotic event means.
That is a heart attack or a stroke that's caused by a little platelet sticking together and causing more platelets to stick and causing a clot or a thrombus. And so... magnesium alone dropped the incidence of that in susceptible people by 35%.
Yowza.
That's pretty potent. And that's cheap and easy. And most people are deficient in magnesium.
We're looking at a list. We got magnesium. We've got coenzyme Q10. We've got vitamin E. We've got natto kinase. I mean, we're making a pretty good list here between the onions and the broccoli and the carrots. All of these things benefiting us and reducing the incidence of heart disease. We do not have to become part of the large statistic that occurs here in the United States of more deaths from heart disease than any other cause.
True. Now, over 50 years old men actually have really definitive evidence for pharma actually coming in here. Aspirin does make an impact. We can reduce the first coronary event and stroke in a man if he takes an 81 milligram aspirin if he's over 50.
You know, doctor, of late, I've been recommending to my clients that they take a 325 milligram, a regular aspirin, twice a week, as opposed to taking an 81 every day, every day, every day. And my reason behind that is because of the number of people that I've seen that have ended up with some kind of gastritis or stomach erosion as a result of taking aspirin every day. When I read the study that said that if you took a 325 milligram aspirin, which is four times what the, quote, baby aspirin 81 milligram dose is, that I'm not exposing that stomach tissue to that aspirin every day, every day, every day. So would you comment on that? Because the study showed that the 325 worked for about 4 days.
Yeah, and actually that's the thing. And it may even make more sense to do that for first, the reason that you mentioned, having only intermittent gastric irritation. And then the other is that with a higher dose, you actually get better penetration of the system that you want to inhibit. You get, it's called stoichiometry. It's a chemistry word that talks about just the physical relationship of the molecules. Think about it. If you have more molecules, you're going to inhibit more enzymes. And that's what aspirin does. It inhibits thromboxane synthesis, and thromboxane is what causes the platelets to stick together. So you get a big dose of the aspirin twice a week, and the effect actually lasts about a week, but the peak effect will be over after 3 to 4 days. So twice a week, 325, limit your gastric risk and still get good efficacy.
Well, and then you get a second bonus, and the second bonus is the fact that two of those 325 milligram aspirin a week reduce the risk of colon cancer.
Right.
So, you know, we're getting, as it were, two bangs for our buck. So, yes, we can do some of it with food. The Mediterranean diet, eating the onions, getting the beta carotene in, having the salmon. We can do it with some supplements, the fish oil, the CoQ10, the alpha lipoic acid, natokinase, magnesium. You know, we haven't mentioned the simplest and easiest, vitamin C.
Absolutely. Vitamin C is it's a connective tissue enhancer. It also works on all the oxidative stress, but I think that vitamin C shores up the structure of the artery, making it stronger. One of the first signs of scurvy or vitamin C deficiency is bruising, meaning that your small blood vessels, the capillaries, are actually rupturing. They're fragile. So their structure is not intact, and they need some building materials, and vitamin C helps collagen be formed, and collagen is the structural matrix, the foundation, the framework that holds the artery together.
You know, I was at UCLA, University of California, Los Angeles, when Dr. James Enstrom released his 10-year study, and it was a study that was done on 11,000 Americans, and it was directly around vitamin C, and this is a 20-year-old study now, but the findings were so provocative, and they were front page findings when Dr. Enstrom, you know, released them. The New York Times had a big front page article on vitamin C being linked to heart benefit. And the thing that was really shocking was that he was giving people 300 milligrams. 300 milligrams. You know, we talk about vitamin C and 3,000 and 6,000 and 10,000.
I give 100,000 IV.
Right. But the thing was that 300 milligrams of vitamin C in the diet from food or from supplements cut the heart disease rate in half.
Yes.
In half. Unfortunately, that information came out about the same time that the drumbeat was increasing for statin drugs.
Yes.
And that information pretty well got buried. The 300 milligrams of vitamin C in women, if they took 300 milligrams in their diet, again, an orange has about 60 milligrams of vitamin C. So, you know, this would be the equivalent of five oranges. And no, I'm not recommending five oranges, but I'm not going to do the whole vitamin C list right now. But it decreased the risk of heart disease in women by a third.
Yes.
So you're talking about a third to a half with something as simple as 300 milligrams of vitamin C?
Well, interestingly enough, there was a study that came out in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology in about 98 that looked at not stents, but angioplasty. This is before they put the wire cage inside the uh-huh. heart. And the a creative Japanese investigator took 500 milligrams of vitamin C, divided it in half, and gave it twice a day to people who had the angioplasty done. And sure enough, it decreased the restenosis rate and the re-heart attack rate by 50%. Uh-huh. When I presented this to a local cardiologist, his answer was, oh, that's not going to pan out. It just so happened that he was just enrolled into a $100,000 study on Plavix, the post-stent heart attack preventer. So pharma's involved, but it also involves the narrow-sightedness of the practitioner.
Well, I mean, the first rule is if you bruise easily, whether you're on a blood thinner or not, if you're one of those people that you come around the corner and you bump into the coffee table and you end up with a big black and blue mark as a result,
yes,
you know, everybody gets bruises.
Yes.
But the thing is, if you get a bigger bruise than you should from the amount of trauma that's happened, or every time you get in the shower, it's an adventure to find out where the new bruise is.
Yes, the new bruise, you have no idea where it came from.
Baby, you need more vitamin C.
Absolutely. Or a little less fish oil.
or a little better glasses.
That could help too.
would make a difference as well. So could we turn around this incredible 500,000 people death rate, this $300 billion annual cost with heart disease like they've done in Japan and in South America and Italy, where all these places where the heart disease rate is lower? There's only two countries in the world that have heart disease rates higher than we have.
Is that Finland and...
Great Britain does, and up there in the Scandinavian countries.
Yes. So I think we can turn it around, but it's going to take a lot of personal responsibility, a lot of effort, a lot of education. We've got to start with children, because children are eating Twinkies still. They're eating partially hydrogenated oils. They're drinking high fructose corn syrup as one of their main food groups. You know, 27% of a kid's calories is going in as high fructose corn syrup. He is a heart attack time bomb waiting to happen. We've got to stop the insanity. This is how we have to change it. We have to start at the paradigm level and rethink what we're doing. People aren't eating food anymore. And if we start eating food again, maybe we'll reduce the risk of heart disease.
Yeah, it sounds pretty ridiculous, but it's really true. Eat what occurs in nature. Take your vitamins. Pay attention and listen to no-nonsense nutrition.
Yes.
Dr. Fred Harvey, internist and geriatrician in practice here in Sarasota and diplomate in the American Board of Holistic Medicine, thanks once again for being my guest.
Thanks for having me.